Hi, I'm Max Kaiser. This is the Kaiser Report. The Bitcoin protocol, it's more than just money. It's more than just revolutionary. It's a freaking black hole that's sucking in every asset class known to the history of humanity into one glorious pop to who knows where, Stacey.
Who knows? But you know what? All our gold bug friends who are naysayers about Bitcoin, they are joining the frenzy. And in fact, this first headline, this gold fund is joining the Bitcoin frenzy. Max, you'll recognize the name of this gold fund, gold and silver fund, actually. The Old Mutual Gold and Silver Fund, which manages $220 million of mostly precious metal equities, is jumping on the Bitcoin bandwagon. And wait until you hear the name in this next paragraph here. It's an old friend of the Kaiser Report. The fund started buying in April with a mandate to allocate as much as 5% to cryptocurrencies, according to its manager, Ned Naylor Leyland. The idea is to take profits from Bitcoin as it advances to reinvest in gold and silver assets, he said in an interview.
Ned Naylor Leyland. Right. Yeah, I saw the story. Ned is talking about Bitcoin as being effectively gold. It was designed to be gold. And now he's invested in it. He's put money to work in it. You know, he's been on our show many times, going back many years. We talked to him about Bitcoin. He's been very reluctant, very hesitant, resisted the idea that it was gold 2.0. But now he's been swept up into the vortex, into the black hole that is Bitcoin. This is also taken over gold money. Our good friends at Gold Money, you know, they were like, bad, Bitcoin bad. Now they're humbled by this asset class, and you know, to their credit, they're adapting, as any sharp business people do. They now offer great Bitcoin solutions over there at Gold Money and other crypto solutions. And now the old gold mutual fund, you know, has become the new crypto fund. Ned Naylor Leyland is now a convert. I'm sure Jim Rickards is yet to fall. Peter Schiff will fall. All these names that have been crypto skeptics will get sucked up into the Bitcoin vortex and black hole, and they will become converts, and that's the way it's going to happen. I'm guaranteed it's going to happen.
Before I continue with the story, the fact that you mentioned the old becomes the new. We are in Durham, D-U-R-M as they pronounce it here. That's why I got the Durham shirt, Durham, North Carolina. And of course, this is the city that Duke built, that tobacco, the great American tobacco sort of companies built this city. It is now one of the hottest cities in all of America for millennials to move to. It's actually like a lot of tech jobs are in this research triangle, more so than, say, Silicon Valley, and all the new jobs are coming to this sort of area. And in fact, Google Fiber, this is their last place that they're building out their fiber thing. So, you know, it's reinventing itself as this new tech hub. It's an old-fashioned monopoly of tobacco industry making, you know, new with the
Yeah, we're talking to Jameson Lopp in the second half. He's a third-generation North Carolinian, and he's a crypto guru, early adopter. Getting ready for 10,000. We're going to have a big 10,000 crypto Bitcoin party right here in Durham.
This hotel.
What's the name of this hotel?
The Durham.
The Durham Hotel. Ask Jameson Lopp about that. The big party, the 10,000 party. He's got a lot of friends, so it'll be wild.
Yes, we actually sat in reception with him, and everybody knew him. It was pretty crazy. But going back to this Bitcoin story, Ned Naylor Leyland, an old name in the UK, the United Kingdom, an old English name.
He's old money. He hangs out with Prince Harry and, you know, his family, I think, was making the cars, Leyland Automobile, or some old ancient historical nonsensical, no longer, you know, relevant industry. And he's sitting behind his desk with his glasses and his fine, you know, Savile Row tailored suit and tie and shirt with the cufflinks, talking to our friend, the Brahmin, the very prominent intellectual.
Oh, Sandeep Jaitley.
Sandeep Jaitley. And they're sipping tea over there at Harrods, and they're discussing gold and economics. And we've been telling them, you got to get into Bitcoin now for 5 or 6 years. They've been, no way, old boy. We are only buying gold.
Well,
now they're begging to buy Bitcoin at 10,000. We told them to buy it at five.
Well, they've been doing their research, and everybody should do their research.
What? What are they, geriatrics? Like, they got cement in their veins? They need to do it.
Let's move on to the story, back to the story, because here's some quotes. So I think it's interesting here, this, you know, old mutual gold and silver fund. They have gold and silver investors, older money, people interested in gold and silver, and they have a plan, and that is, as he mentioned, you know, to take as much as 5% invested in cryptocurrencies, take their stay at 5% as the profits, as the prices continue to rise, and buy more gold and silver with it. It's an interesting, unique plan for their investor
class. It's numbnuts. Okay. It's a numbnuts plan.
Well, you know, everybody has a different portfolio tolerance and whatever. But here he is what he says. Bitcoin was explicitly designed to be digital gold, said Naylor Leyland. So if you're going to have a small proportion of a fund in Bitcoin, it should be in a gold fund, because that's exactly the point. It's about bringing the ownership of disciplined money into the modern world. Bitcoin is paving the way for the reintroduction of gold as global money. So you had said this first.
He stole that from me. Ned stole that from me.
So let's like talk to a lot of our audience might not know Naylor Leyland. So, you know, they might not know the backstory to this. But let's talk about this notion of Bitcoin paving the way for gold to be reintroduced as global money.
No, I kid about Ned, you know, but he's a nice guy and he's a gentleman. And you know, you have to be when you're underperforming to the magnitude.
Okay, let me continue.
As far as introducing gold back into the global currency, yes, because I've said this, and I'm glad someone else is picking up on this. Bitcoin is helping gold by shattering the matrix of Wall Street that is incurring the naked short selling and the financial manipulation that's going on in the futures market of gold. Since, you know, you've got T0, you've got the settlement is the trade date of the contract, et cetera, that we see guys like Patrick Byrne pioneering over there at Overstock. We're going to obliterate all the machinery that's killing the gold price. This will open up the, like, parting the sea of derivatives. Like, Bitcoin is Moses, parting the sea of derivatives. And through the gap, well, gold price will finally get to $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 an ounce, thanks to Bitcoin. The ungratefulness of the Peter Schiffs of the world and the Jim Rickards of the world who don't understand what we're doing to make them look good is mind-boggling.
So let's move on, because into his come to Jesus moment, how he studied it. Like, he's been slow thinking about it, watching it, studying Bitcoin. And again, I do implore you, you know, one can look at the hypermania of Max Keiser and the hyper Bitcoinization.
Who's hypermania?
Or you know, and just pile in everything you've got, or you have to study it and understand what you're getting into, the reason why you want to own Bitcoin, the reason why you want to get involved in Bitcoin, and that's a good, sensible, healthy thing to do. But here he's like, why he likes Bitcoin and the blockchain, what he has studied as a gold investor, as a long-term gold investor. Ned Naylor Leyland says, Bitcoin and blockchain resolve gold's problems of divisibility, ownership, and speed of transmission, said Naylor Leyland, who's investing through a Swedish-listed exchange-traded fund. We're going to revert to sound money, he said. If you imagine sound money and blockchain together, there's quite an exciting potential outcome. His fund has about 80% in gold and silver equities and most of the rest in physical metal.
Well, he's referring to Aristotle's four conditions of money. They got scarcity, fungibility, portability, and desirability. Bitcoin fulfills all of those, has since day one. Anyone who's a student of gold should have picked up on that 5 or 6 years ago. And yes, it does fulfill all the conditions, as Aristotle pointed out, of sound money, that gold qualifies, so does Bitcoin. And he's correct. It's infinitely divisible, it's portable, it's scarce, and it's desirable. The condition of scarcity is the one that people have trouble with. They don't understand how you can have digital scarcity. Mm. But this is the genius of the protocol. It creates, for the first time ever in the history, digital scarcity that's scalable, immutable, and fulfills all the characteristics of money.
And there were, I mean, Peter Schiff had a valid argument and concern when he was looking at it and seeing that there's Bitcoin then there's Bitcoin Cash, then there's Bitcoin Gold, then there's Ether, then there's Dash, then there's, you know, all these cryptocurrencies, all these ICOs, and their notion was, well, this is infinite inflation. And yet, what we've seen is that despite Bitcoin Gold, despite Bitcoin Cash, the price continues to rise. I think all in, it's like well over $10,000 at this point, if you add in all the forks.
Right, the Peter Schiff argument is nonsense because, you know, there is gold and then there's silver, there's bronze, there's diamonds, there's collectible art, there's a Da Vinci that sells for $450 million. Okay, anything that's scarce, people want to buy and it goes up if they are looking to preserve their asset values. So the fact that there's more than one crypto out there doesn't diminish the argument for Bitcoin whatsoever. Just like gold is the perfect element on the periodic table that attracts the physical attributes, according to Roy Sabag, makes so genius an argument for. Same thing can be said about the protocol for Bitcoin. It's unique in this way. It's entrenched. It's a monopoly. It follows Metcalfe's law. It's expanding exponentially. It also follows Thayer's law. For all you freaking couch economists out there, where you've got good money pushing out bad money, plus it's got the effects of the other effects.
But I might want to say also in the last minute here that it's been basically, an analysis has found that 4 million Bitcoin are missing. You speak of Da Vinci. They found a Da Vinci after hundreds of years. It's worth 450 million. I reckon those 4 million Bitcoin might be found in another 100 years, 200 years. Somebody might find the keys, find them, access them, and it'll be worth 450 million for one Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's in my sock drawer. I know, I left it in a sock.
The left or the right?
I think it was the left sock. It's a Christmas sock that I had with little Santa Clauses and Christmas trees.
How many of the 4 million missing Bitcoin are there?
About 3.8 million. And it's in a laundromat somewhere on 16th Street, the last scene. I put the paper wallet in there, and I went through the wash cycle. So, yeah, it's like 3.8 million times 10,000. You do the math. You know, it's worth maybe investigating. But don't go away. Much more coming your way right after the break.
At RT, we have a great team, but we needed to strengthen before the FIFA World Cup. And who better than a legend to keep it tight at the back?
In 1992, Denmark qualified for the European Championships at the very last moment. No one believed in us, but we won. And I'm hoping to bring some of that winning spirit to the RT team. Recently, I've had a lot of practice, so I can guarantee you that Peter Schmeichel will be on the best form since my last World Cup. Schmeichel from that. Toro, please. That was an old joke. I was only kidding. Here I come, Russia. Right. No, left, more left. Okay, stop. That's really good, that.
There is no center in the United States political discourse. It's all center right. Ever since the Clinton people came into power, the center has become the right. And there's no peace party that exists in my country. I don't see any evidence of it except this third party that is so criticized, the Green Party.
The village of Kalachi has been nicknamed Sleepy Hollow because for some unknown reason, its local residents have fallen victim to a sleep epidemic.
Что, уснул, да?
Да вон, что сейчас вообще было?
Такое состояние, как будто человек выпивший. А так будешь, отвечают, все.
А вы играли где-то еще?
У детей могут быть галлюцинации, потому что у них еще не сформировался головной мозг.
Такое ощущение, что у этого кресла появляются щупальца, и они вот тебя вот так вот прям ноги прижимают, и все.
Измеряем 8 показателей. Угарный газ, формальдегиды, углеводороды.
Это ствол шахты 6. Здесь выдавалась по нему руда.
Мощность 180 метров. Опасно.
Население здесь где-то осталось 95 семей. Поселке. Раньше было население 6500.
Welcome back to the Kaiser Report. I'm Max Kaiser. Time now to turn to Jameson Lopp. Jameson, welcome back.
Great to be here.
All right, Jameson Lopp, you are in the Bitcoin space, have been so for a long time. You know, I've been in the space a long time, and it's hard to find wisdom in this space. It's hard to find people with a level head that have a certain Zen quality. I would say you're the only one that I have found that actually has an even perspective. So we're talking about Bitcoin, and, you know, one of the things you say about Bitcoin is that, you know, we don't really know yet what this is all about. You know, people are theorizing, is it a replacement for money? Is it the new money? Is it going to take, is it evil? Is it great? You know, you feel that there's things on the horizon still to be discovered. And can you just talk a little bit about this philosophically before we talk about prices and stuff?
Absolutely. I mean, we're learning more about this system every day. You know, Satoshi Nakamoto created this thing in 2009, and people have been joining this open collaboration of this project, and they've been arguing, they've been building, they've been, you know, tearing each other's ideas apart, sometimes tearing each other apart, and it's this weird sort of new type of human consensus. I mean, it is crypto anarchy. It is a system where no one rules. And as a result, it's very hard to decide, you know, what are the rules, or how do we decide what the rules are? How do we evolve the system? People are, I would say, experimenting. They're poking the system. They're trying different things. A lot of times they're trying, you know, traditional political or governance methodologies. Most of the time those fail. And people are just going to keep poking the system and trying to understand it better, and the grand experiment is going to continue.
So you mentioned a phrase there, human consensus, and this is a phrase, a key phrase in the whole Bitcoin ethos is consensus. And so it's interesting that throughout the human history, there's always been a need to figure out how to govern. You know, as humans come together, you know, going from the hunter-gatherer phase to the agricultural village phase, the domestic phase, you know, you have to have some kind of social contract, as we call this in the 18th century, between the governed and the ones being governed. And here in Bitcoin, the consensus is completely distributed and it's frictionless, and you don't need a government. It's all run on game theory. And in the case of Bitcoin, it seems to cleave down, sociologically speaking, the community, and it's gotten rid of people like Mike Hearn, for example, who was part of the core Bitcoin group developers and then had a rage quit and flew the coop because he wasn't happy about the way things were going. Then we had another major break with this Roger Ver Bitcoin Cash, which is a fork of Bitcoin. And along ideological lines, and who had the true Satoshi vision, it's quite interesting sociologically, psychologically. Can you speak a little bit about what Bitcoin Cash is, what people should be aware of it, and if they own it before August 8th, they own it, et cetera. And then a little bit on the sociological aspect of it that I think you do well.
Bitcoin Cash is a hard fork of Bitcoin, and so there was a snapshot taken at the beginning of August where, you know, whatever number of coins you had on Bitcoin, you now have on Bitcoin Cash, and all you have to do is get the wallet software that supports that, load up your private keys, and now you can transact on this new network, which is 99% the same rules as Bitcoin, just a few changes on the back end of transaction formats and block sizes and whatnot. And so really what we found here is there's this ideological split between the technical changes that people think should be implemented in order to scale Bitcoin to get it to reach more people. So the main thing is people arguing about, should we scale mostly on the blockchain or should we scale mostly off the blockchain? Personally, I think, you know, we need every type of scaling we can get, but the on blockchain scaling to, you know, potentially infinitely large block sizes has a lot of ramifications that will impact the ability for the average user to retain sovereignty and to really decide for themselves what Bitcoin is. And you really do that by running a Bitcoin node and using that to secure your money.
All right, we need to roll that back a little bit because you have to unpack what you're talking about there. So the large block size, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, would tend to put power into the miners. And it would be a move against the total decentralization of this protocol, of this network. And this is against what would be the ethos of this totally decentralized protocol. And so, and we've seen that with the apparent conflict of interest between those who sell mining chips, like over there in China at Bitmain, who are for the big blocks, and they would be the direct beneficiary of this. So isn't that a direct conflict of interest, number one? What are your thoughts there?
So I would say, generally speaking, and I hate to, you know, put anybody into a box, but it seems like a lot of the proponents of Bitcoin Cash believe that Bitcoin miners are kind of a trusted guardian of the network, and they're happy to have nodes that are very expensive to run and only large enterprises and miners can run them, because they believe that the sovereignty really comes from having your private keys and being able to transact from that standpoint. But the miners, of course, are potentially a fairly centralized entity. I think that proponents of Bitcoin Cash would have a counter argument that Bitcoin Core is a centralized entity, and they see trade-off of one versus the other as not being particularly a big deal. So we could argue in minutia all day long, but the proponents behind doing hard forks and changing Bitcoin faster, they're willing to make trade-offs in order to try to get mainstream adoption as quickly as possible.
All right, so to get back to our first point here, there seems to be something bigger, forces larger than anyone can account for operating here. And that is partly attributed to game theory. So in other words, while these two political camps are battling it out, you have potentially the whole thing being a moot point, because as far as mining goes, you now have Japan getting into mining with the 7.5 micron size chips. You've got something Dragon Mint, which I'm just hearing about, which is a mining initiative. So in other words, good old free market capitalism is still at play here and could trump any political party. And any political party so far that's tried to coalesce has been blown out, has been wiped out. Is that a fair statement? And what is Dragon Mint? I've just learned about it in the last week or so. I think it's brand new. What do you know about it? Tell us about it.
I think there are actually a multitude of initiatives going on behind the scenes, because this whole ordeal over the past year or two with miners like blocking segregated witness activation and kind of acting like bullies in various ways has really put a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths. And the people who got into Bitcoin early on tend to be very anti-authoritarian. And whenever they feel that any particular entity or group is beginning to amass too much power, they dig in their heels and they say, no, we're not going to go along with this. We're rejecting you. So I think that there are actually many more initiatives on the mining side where people have gotten frustrated and they've said, you know what, we're willing to put in the capital to help further decentralize the mining, to make it a more competitive market. I think we're going to see more announcements coming in the coming months, and that in general, mining is going to become more competitive and the miners are going to lose a lot of their kind of bargaining chips of their hash power. So the Dragon Mint, from my understanding, is really backed by BTC Drac, who is a Bitcoin Core developer. And I think he's working with some chip fabricators. And they're just trying to get the most efficient miners out there on the market to get them in as many hands as possible to further decentralize hash power.
Right, BTC Drac. And what's his Twitter handle? I think it's BTC Drac.
I believe so.
What's your Twitter handle?
Just LOPP, L-O-P-P.
And also, if you go to LOPP at Twitter, you have links to fantastic resources. You have a bit of a library of the white papers and other documents that have people, if they want to learn. I say to people that they ask me, should I be buying Bitcoin? I say, you've got to put in the work to learn about it first, because otherwise, when the correction comes, and we know that there will be a correction, you need to have an intellectual foundation. You don't want to panic sell once you've panic bought. Like, you need to know what's going on here a little bit. So talking about price, okay, let's talk about price. We're, as we speak here now, we're flirting with 10,000. And what are your thoughts on the price? I mean, you started in under a dollar, I believe, right?
I was in single digit territory, yeah.
In the single digits, as we were. where do you see that going? Not to hold you accountable to it. I mean, obviously it's a bit of a speculation, but what are your thoughts
on
the
price? It is, and people come up with various calculations of if it replaces so much of the gold market or so much of stock or bonds or other commodities or what have you. As I kind of mentioned recently, actually, people were asking about buying low, selling high type of stuff, is that it's easy to buy low or buy the dips because we know where the floor is. You know, it can only go to zero. It can't go any further below that. But where is the ceiling? Nobody knows where the ceiling is. $100,000 Bitcoin sounds preposterous, but I mean, we're 10x where we were a year ago. I'm not saying we'll do another 10x another year, but in terms of like global wealth and global money supply, you know, six digit Bitcoin is certainly possible in the not too distant future.
Now there's two concepts, hyper Bitcoinization and the Bitcoin black hole. Now, hyper-Bitcoinization, I believe, was coined by the fellow who runs the Satoshi Institute. What's his name? Do you remember?
Is that Pierre Richard, I believe?
No, it's the other guy. He's kind of a recluse.
I think it might be Michael, but...
we'll get it.
We'll get to it.
We're missing your name. But so hyper-Bitcoinization essentially means that you just abandon the fiat world completely, and we just go totally Bitcoin for everything, right?
That is not going to happen until at least we fix the scalability problems. So, you know, that's what we're really hoping these second layer solutions will do. And really, that's going to continue to be an experiment of, we're gonna see Lightning Network come online and possibly even other second layer networks. And then Bitcoin, as Andreas Antonopoulos has said, it's going to continue to fail to scale. And so we're going to hit road bumps, we're gonna have growing pains, people are gonna complain about this or that, and then we're gonna fix the problems. I mean, it's all software, and so the software engineers are gonna see the problems, fix the problems, and we're gonna move forward.
Right, so in the Bitcoin black hole, this is something I thought of just recently, that essentially, the money starts to be drawn away from the stock market. So if you have a stock market crash because people are buying Bitcoin, unlike the 2008 crisis that was met with a wall of money from central banks, there is absolutely no way to stop a black hole of Bitcoin sucking all the world's capital. If this thing goes to 100,000 plus in a global panic buying, if a sovereign wealth fund like Abu Dhabi is saying, yeah, they're gonna be buying Bitcoin, if you have game theory applied to the sovereign wealth funds, and this thing goes to 300,000 plus, and the stock market crashes, is there any force in the universe that can stop this, Jameson Locke?
Well, I guess nation states with enough nuclear capabilities to blanket the world in EMPs and shut down the internet for a little while might be able to put a bit of a blip in the road, in the markets, but...
It sounds like a Bond thriller and James Bond thriller. Is that why Bitcoin Cash attracts so many would-be James Bond evil characters like John McAfee, you know, Roger Ver, Rick Falvina? These guys could be the evil doer in a James Bond movie. Is that what attracts them to it? The sense of unlimited power?
You know, I mean, there may be some of that. I don't think that any of these guys are evil. I've met pretty much all of them. I think that a lot of it just has to do with frustration. And, you know, they believe that the very conservative, slow process that Bitcoin Core and the vast majority of users subscribe to is just not fast enough, and that something else is going to subsume Bitcoin.
The unflappable Jameson Lopp, ever the diplomat. Thanks. Can you stay for another segment?
Absolutely.
All right, super. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Kaiser Report. Me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert, like I guess. Jameson Lopp. You can find him at Twitter at Lopp. You can find us on Twitter at Kaiser Report. Until next time, bye, y'all.